Hi, welcome back to CKUT. Today we are Friday and it's March the 3rd. So let's start with the music. Fooling Myself.
Anyhow, anyways, I don't know what I'm saying, and I call me out myself. I don't care. Your beauty, mama, it's all around me. Your beauty, mama.
Something more, wanna believe in something, wanna believe in something.
Hi. So today I will be hosting the show with Carla and Sai. So Sai, can you hear us and speak?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I can hear you too.
So today is a special episode.
Yes, we will have the pleasure to meet Dr. Catherine Scott, who is working at the McGill's Department of Natural Sciences. So she's an arachnologist, and she is also a behavioral ecologist. And today we are meeting her because she's going to talk to us a little bit about her work with spiders, but also about the new documentary film, which is called Bug Sex, It's Complicated, which is going to be released this next Friday on March the 10th at 9 p.m. on CBC.
Yeah, and Sai, I heard that apparently you're a big bug person.
Yeah, I just love bugs a lot. I've really been into them since I was a child, and I also like to draw my friends as little bugs, so I'm a big person through and through.
So you're ideal for this, because I am not a bug person at all. Adele, I don't know about you. But before we have Dr. Scott on, I have to ask you, why bugs? Because I don't think of them as like these like cute things to like obsess over.
I guess it's like, I think there's like, they're very silly and they're very cute. And I guess it's, I like how they, like, there's like so many species for bugs. Like, it's not just one thing, it's so many things, and you get to learn so much about just evolution and like animal species and just about them, and they're all so different amongst them. I just love them a lot.
Do you study them? I mean, do you take classes related to that?
I'm currently doing geology, but I think I might shift to biology and evolution to like study more about them and like how they evolved. Even for example, I was like looking at this article about the Galapagos Islands and how there's like so many flies there that are like key parts to evolution, and but they're not been identified yet. So yeah, I think I want to do that more.
Adele, I can see the look on your face.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of bugs, but yeah.
Yeah, and to someone like me and Adele who are not like big into bugs, what's the best argument that you could use to get us into like bugs?
That's very interesting. I don't know. I sometimes have friends who are like, they would go against me and try to like make me angry that they don't like bugs. But I guess to like them, if I were to convince you to like them, it's like, I would start by convincing you, oh, look how cool butterflies are, and I will take you to the insectarium, and then we'll look at all, like, the taxidermy figures. But Silence of the Lambs, which is not a great example to make you start liking bugs, is also a great way into getting into horror movies and bugs.
Don't you prefer animals?
Well, animals are also cool, but bugs, they are special. There's also like really pretty ones. Like there's a rosy moth. It's pink and yellow, and it's very cute. And I would start showing you like cute bugs, and then we'll get into like big, scary, groovy things.
I actually used to work at a summer camp last summer, and the kids in my group, they were like 6 and 7. They were absolutely obsessed with bugs, especially ants. They would like try to like capture all the ants they could, and they would like make ant colonies in like the park, and I would always be like really freaked out by it. But I think they kind of made me appreciate ants, because I mean, it was a way for them to like enjoy themselves, just, you know, like playing with ants, and they wouldn't bother me. So I mean, yeah, ants were great for that reason. But something like a spider, I could never really think like, oh, I want to get into like liking spiders, or I don't know how they're called in English, like a milpat, like, you know, like the really like long ones with like a bunch of legs.
Oh, like a centipede or a millipede.
A centipede, yes.
Centipede.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they're fine. They kind of Like, I love spiders. I'm actually getting a spider tattoo soon.
Oh.
And, but I don't like ants. Ants are, like, one of the no-nos in my book.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they have a vendetta against me. Like, when I was young, they would, like, just keep biting me, so I've just, like, turned against them. But I'm great that, it's great that you like ants, you know? Yay, ants.
I mean, maybe. I like ants in certain contexts. I mean, there was an ant infestation every year around springtime. There's always an ant infestation in my house because I don't know why people keep leaving fruits out and like the ants keep coming in. So it's like always a hassle for me because I have to go to like Canadian Tire and buy like, like, you know, like the sticky strips and like hang them.
Yeah,
flies too. Flies are awful. I hate flies. Fruit flies are the worst. Once there's one in your house, there's going to be like 15.
Yeah, but the mosquitoes are the worst.
We don't live near like a still body of water, so I don't have to deal with mosquitoes all that much. But I did go to Haiti a few years ago, and I got attacked alive by mosquitoes. I left with like 45 mosquito bites all over me. It was awful.
Yeah, I don't like mosquitoes either. I just
do they serve a purpose?
I do not know, honestly. I don't care about them, and I don't want to learn about them.
Okay. I think we're going to play one short song, and then we're going to get back to our interview and start our interview with Dr. Catherine Scott. Do you have any suggestions, Adele, or do you want me to just...
Oh, I can... leave you.
Okay. Well, just leave me. okay. So, I'm just going to be, wow. I put myself on the spot. Okay. I am a massive bug sounds. Wow. Yeah. Okay. That's good suggestion, Spencer. So I guess we're just going to play bug sounds for you, while we're waiting for here are fireflies and crickets before we get to our interview about bug sex with Dr. Catherine Scott. Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Adele, do you want to introduce our special guest for today?
Yes, of course. It's a pleasure to meet you, Dr. Scott. So you're an arachnologist, and you study the sexual life of spiders. So how come did you get into that?
So that was basically an accident, actually. I was terrified of spiders up until I was about 25 years old. And I was taking an invertebrate zoology class and had a TA who was studying the sexual communication of black widows and looking for a summer research assistant. And even though I was afraid of spiders, that sounded like a really cool opportunity. I wanted to get research experience, and it had never occurred to me before that spiders communicate, let alone using vibrations. So I applied for the job, even though I was scared, and I figured I just have to get over my fear if I was offered the position, and I was. And very quickly, I got to know the spiders. I started looking at them more closely and learning about their behavior and their communication. And my job was essentially deciphering the language that they're speaking to each other through vibrations across the web. And I very quickly fell in love with them. And I have been obsessed with spiders ever since.
Because in the popular culture, like, the spider is something frightening. So what do you think about this perception? Would you like it to change, or?
Yeah, so as I said, I used to be afraid of spiders myself, so I understand the how the public in general, most people have a distaste for spiders. If they don't fear them, they just maybe don't think about them all that much. And I have devoted a lot of energy since I started studying spiders to trying to combat some of the myths and misconceptions about spiders, because their reputation is largely undeserved. There are a few spiders, like the black widows, which I studied, that are capable of harming humans, but bites are extremely and for the most part, spiders are harmless, and they are far more beneficial to humans than they are harmful. They're really important in every ecosystem in which they're top predators of insects, food for other animals. They're really important members of every ecosystem in which they occur, and they're almost everywhere on Earth. Spiders can be found on the top of Mount Everest. They can be found in agricultural fields, in the Arctic tundra, in the deserts, on beaches, pretty much everywhere you could imagine. So they're really important and I think beautiful once you start sophisticated communication. Let's call her back. And we tell her that we can't hear her. Bite that spiders are scary because those things are involved.
Dr. Scott, I'm really sorry to interrupt you. It's just that we're experiencing a few technical difficulties. So if it would be possible to call us so that we could...
We're going to give you a call.
Yeah, we're going to give you a call just so that we can reestablish sound. Yeah. In the meanwhile, while we get that figured out, we will be creating fireflies and crickets.
Okay. So you're going to call me on my phone?
Oh, yeah, because you were saying that bugs are very important to us, to the ecological system. And I was reading the description of the movie Bug Sex, and it was saying that, like, if humans disappear from Earth, well, nothing will really change. But if these bugs, these spiders disappear, there's no more ecological system that's working. So how come they are so important to us?
Well, so insects, of course, are incredibly diverse and abundant, and they're important for humans for our food security and food systems, because most pollinators are insects. So, of course, bees and flies and beetles and other insects pollinate plants, so they're incredibly important. And spiders eat those insects. And there are also insects, of course, that eat plants. There are some that are agricultural pests that also cause a threat to the food that we grow. And so spiders are really important predators of those insects. And also insects, as well as spiders, are really important food sources for other animals like birds. So they're all part of this interconnected food web. And if you remove any one part of it, things don't work the way that they should. And in general, arthropods, insects, spiders, other arachnids are really important for every ecosystem in which they occur.
So we have also a chance to have Sai today with us, and she is, I think, like you, very keen on spiders. So Sai, do you have some questions?
Yeah, it's just like based off of what you said, I had a few questions. You said they're very beneficial to, like, humans. I was wondering if you could talk more about how they're beneficial to humans, especially since, like, you were, like, Adele mentioned, and you were mentioning how there's, like, this whole myth about being scared of them.
Yes. So I always say spiders are much more helpful than they are harmful. The idea that spiders bite people is really not... At least the idea that they go around biting people all the time, that people get bitten by spiders in their sleep, is not really based in fact. Some spiders can bite people. Some spiders can make people sick. But the vast majority of spiders are harmless to humans. And unlike many blood-feeding arthropods like ticks, mites, mosquitoes, things like that, spiders don't feed on human blood, so they have no reason to bite us. And to harm us. So their job is essentially eating insects and other arthropods. And they do a great job at that. Every year, globally, they eat somewhere between 400 and 800 million metric tons of insects, which, imagine the world without spiders, you would have way more of the insects like mosquitoes and black flies and things like that. That are not so good for humans. So spiders are important as top predators of insects in ecosystems that are putting pressure on those insect populations. And spiders in our homes, in our gardens, are eating insects that we might not otherwise want to be in our house, or eating the insects in our gardens that might be eating our plants. And they're also really important food sources for birds and other animals.
I also have one question about how you mentioned we can find them on, like, Mount Everest or desert, like, pretty much everywhere. Is there anything specific that makes them so adaptable to, like, harsh environments or, like, any environments that they're present in?
That's a good question. I guess they have been around for a really long time. There are over 50,000 species of spiders on Earth today worldwide. And they have had a lot of time to evolve and adapt to almost every terrestrial environment on the planet. They don't occur in Antarctica, but they occur pretty much everywhere else, like you said, on Mount Everest, you know, on the tops of mountains, on deserts, on beaches, in forests, in agricultural settings, in our homes. You all probably have a spider in your house right now, because some of them have adapted to living around humans. So they've had a really long time to diverge, and individual species are really good at surviving in their particular environment, because they have evolved over time to be sort of specialists, whether they're a desert specialist or a very cold tolerant species that lives in the Arctic tundra.
I see. And so, like, these species, do you think that their communication language and their vibrations differ from each other? Or is it that all of them can understand how, like, what they're trying to say, quote-unquote trying to say?
Yeah, so I think the sort of language of spiders, the signals that they use to communicate, is definitely species-specific. And I was talking about vibrations before because that's what I started studying with the black widows. They communicate largely through vibrations on their webs, but they also use chemical signaling. So they communicate through smell and taste over long distances. And some spiders communicate visually. So they have multiple communication channels, and they can have different kinds of signals and messages and languages, so to speak, that they use in these different channels. And every species is different. And there might be some overlap in terms of the kinds of behaviors that they make and the kinds of signals that those produce. And so sometimes you could say that a female spider who's watching the display of a male, if it's visual, or hearing or detecting the vibrations of a male who's dancing for her, displaying for her, if he's a closely related species but not the same species as her, some of that message might get across to her, and she might sort of make a mistake and accept a male even though he's not the correct species because there is overlap in their signals. But for distantly related spiders, the kinds of signals that they produce, whether they be chemical signals that are sort of like perfumes that attract mates from long distance, or vibratory signals that are produced by plucking the webs of the silk or drumming on the ground with parts of the body, those might be very, very different for distantly related spiders. So I think there's over 50,000 species of spiders. There are probably 50,000 quite distinct languages, although there will be overlap.
I see. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, I do. Since we're here to talk about the documentary Bug Sex, how did the idea of making a documentary focused on the mating practices of bugs come about?
So I think it was largely the idea of my PhD supervisor, Marianne Andrade at U of T. And she has spent most of her career studying the sex lives of widow spiders. So black widows, Australian redbacks, brown widows. There's a bunch of species all in this genus called the widow spiders, and she is kind of the world expert on their sex lives. And I think she previously hosted a couple of episodes of The Nature of Things and was talking with a producer about the work that she does and how there are so many cool stories about spider sex, but also throughout the arachnid and insect world, there's such an amazing diversity of sexual behaviors. And I mean, you could make many documentaries about this. And so I think she was excited to share what she does and people in her lab, including me and my colleague Luciana, who's also in the show, and then other people, to kind of highlight the weird and wonderful and wild sex lives of the smaller majority, these insects and spiders that are actually much more abundant than your typical vertebrates, the mammals and the reptiles and things that you usually see on nature documentaries. So it's a more unexplored world that I think is really exciting for people to learn more about.
But the title of the movie includes that it's complicated. So what does it mean? Is it a subject that is like not that much talked about because it is more complicated?
I think the title, It's Complicated, is to me, highlights the diversity of sexual behaviors and sexual systems across insects and arachnids and bugs, so to speak, because there's so much really interesting variety. It's not just one system. You know, you might assume from a human perspective, we have sort of rigid ideas about sex roles and about what goes on with mating and courtship. In insects and spiders, you know, they do it in so many different ways. In some species, males will compete for access to females, but in other species, females compete for access to males. Or even within the same species, across a season or across different environmental contexts, the sex roles might switch. And they also do all kinds of other weird things, and there's so much variation. So some insects and arachnids don't bother with sex at all, and they can just reproduce without a partner, asexually. In some species, the female will lay eggs on the ground, and then the male kind of, other way around. The male will deposit a sperm packet on the ground, and then the female picks it up. In other groups, the male has to insert the sperm package into the female with an intromittent organ that's something like a penis. And then in some insects, it's the opposite, and the female has a penis-like intromittent organ that goes into the male in order to accept sperm from him. Some species, the male will offer a gift to the female. Sometimes it's the other way around. In spiders, sometimes the male wraps the female with silk. In some cases, it can be deadly, and the female might eat the male, but that can reverse too. So you probably, if you think of black widows, you probably know or have this idea that the female can eat the male. But in another species of spider that is featured in this film, it's the opposite. And actually, the male sometimes eats the female spider. So it's just incredibly diverse. They do all kinds of weird things. And it's much more complicated than human sex. Our sex lives are simple relative to the arthropods.
Oh, and I'm curious, what does the job of an arachnologist look like?
So it varies. I mean, so arachnologist means person who studies arachnids. I personally study mainly spiders, although I have also worked with mites and ticks. But there are actually a whole bunch of other groups of arachnids, like scorpions and pseudoscorpions. I've actually started working a little bit on those. And it depends on whether you're employed in a museum or at a university. Doing research, you might work more with specimens if you're a museum worker and a taxonomist. I'm more of an ecologist and behavior researcher, so I spend a lot of time in the field watching spiders and other arachnids and learning about their behavior and their ecology. But I've also done a lot of laboratory work where I do experiments to understand the vibrations, which involved using laser vibrometers, or to understand chemical signals using, you know, chemistry techniques. So it really varies a lot. Arachnologists study arachnids, but the biology of arachnids can encompass a lot of different disciplines. So chemical ecology, behavior, ecology, evolution, taxonomy, and so on. So there's a great diversity of jobs sort of within or encompassed by the title arachnologist.
And do you see a change, like because of climate change, has it any effect on the spiders especially?
So I don't think that there have been any studies specifically looking at declines in spiders. You're probably familiar with the idea of the insect apocalypse and how, in light of climate change, there have been declines in insects. And if there are fewer insects, then it stands to reason that that will affect spiders because spiders depend on insects as prey. So the answer to that is probably spiders are affected generally by climate change. And certainly the spiders that live in sort of extreme habitats, like the wolf spiders in the Arctic tundra, for example, their ecology is certainly impacted by climate change. If sort of the temperatures are changing, if prey abundance and the timing of plants and insects being active in the north is changing, then certainly that will have an impact on the spiders.
I have a question on like the technicalities of filming a documentary on bug sex. So how hard is, because spiders, depending on the size, it could be like really tiny or really big. So how do you like keep track of which ones to film? And is it done in like a controlled environment, or do you just like sort of just observe them doing their thing and you like film it?
All of the above. So I think you'll see in the documentary some of the shots of the insects and spiders will have been taken in the laboratory under quite controlled settings in sort of the same kind of way that we would do an experiment where we have a spider or an insect set up like in a box in the laboratory so we know exactly where it's going to be and the filmographers can set up with macro lenses and get zoom in really close and have an idea of where the animals are going to be and what they're going to do. But there's also a lot of filming that was done in the field, and that involved me and my partner were part of the filming in British Columbia. And so we were out on the beach in the natural habitat of the black widows, and we were just going around finding spiders, and if they were in a good position, doing something interesting, we would stop and film them. So sort of a little bit of everything. And it was a challenge for the filmographers. They kind of had to use a variety of different kinds of cameras and lenses to get close to film the, you know, an overview of the habitat and then get really up close and personal with these quite tiny insects and spiders when they needed to.
So why do you think people should watch this documentary?
Just because your mind will be blown by all of the weird things that bugs do to find mating partners, to convince mating partners to have sex with them, and the mechanics of the sex and the behaviors that go along with it. It's weird and wild and fascinating, and you will see something new for sure.
Sai, do you have any more questions?
I did have one more question. I read in the description that the director chose people to work with who were with their partners on the research project and the documentary. I wanted to ask, what was the experience like for everybody and for you working with their partner on a cool opportunity and talking about insects and spiders and their sex lives?
It's awesome. I mean, It's interesting. I don't know if it's more common in entomology and arachnology than in other fields, but I personally know a lot of partners who work together on insects and spiders and who are also partners in life. And you know, my partner and I love to work together. We've done a lot of research together. It was super fun to help film this documentary together. And my supervisor, Madianne and her partner, they're both professors at UTSC, and I have a lot of colleagues and friends who are in the same position. We're all just weird bug nerds who like to work with bugs and also to enjoy kind of being in nature and hanging out with bugs in our spare time as well.
Do you own any bugs? Do you like have any bugs? Do you have any bugs as pets? Because you said you like to hang out with them in your free time as well.
I have a couple of pets. I have pet tarantulas and some other spiders as well, for sure. And my partner is actually a really excellent macro photographer. So for fun, we like to go out for nature walks and look for insects and spiders, and then he takes beautiful photographs of them.
That is very cool.
Well, thank you, Dr. Scott, for answering our questions today. And
thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Bug Sex, It's Complicated comes out next Friday on CBC and CBC Gem. Be sure to check it out because we all will.
Yes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye.
Oh, that was great.
Yay. Oh. And we are back.
Yes, we've been back south.
To the background of bug sounds. Sai, were all your questions answered? Because I know you're super passionate about this.
Yes, well, I had many more, but I didn't want to take like a lot of the time. I had like a list prepared about asking all the questions that I have, because I like to think about bugs in my free time as well.
You know, I think after this, I might become more of an enthusiast. I definitely will be checking out the documentary, because just bug sex, you never think about it. But hearing how vital it is, you know, and like spiders, how important they are to, you know, our survival as a species, I will be sure to tune in, because, I mean, it's fascinating, honestly, especially when you think of it in comparison to human sex, which is, as she said, very, very simple. And then bug sex, there's just like 15,000 different varieties of it.
Yeah, it's very fascinating, which is why I like them so much. I don't know. Adele, what do you think?
I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, I'm sure it is. It's also fascinating to discover things that you don't know. So it's always a good thing to also care and like, care about these kind of things, because if it's that important, then it's our duty also to look after their survival and, yeah, be more respectful, I guess, because I'm not always respectful with bugs, but...
Yeah. I mean, also, it's this thing that's, like, so important, but we don't really, like, think about it. Like, bugs are integral to, you know, our survival as a species, but we never think about it. We just think of them as like these like really like pesky annoyances that you have to deal with once in a while. You know, I know for my mother, that's why she loves winter, because she doesn't have to like deal with bugs anymore. But like the reality of having to live in a world that doesn't have any bugs is like quite frightening.
Yes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, she mentioned slightly about how like they're also very important pollinators, and I think because of climate change, we've been reading about bees and their impact on the environment. If we don't have bees, then like we won't have food or like flowers. So I think it's really like you said, it would be quite frightening to have a world without bugs.
And it also reminds me, I took a history class where a Canadian history class where we talked a bit about sort of environmental history, and an important aspect that my professor, who is Suzanne Morton, who's absolutely awesome. If ever you want to take a Canadian history class, you should take her. This is free promo for Suzanne Morton. But in one of our class, she mentioned how we tend to care a lot for animals who are very cute. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like dogs, like dog cruelty, people care about a lot. Cat cruelty, people care about a lot. Bunnies being used for, you know, animal testing, we're going to care a lot about them because they're cute and we want to see them survive. I think it's kind of the same with bugs, whereas, you know, you don't really care about salmons. Salmons are viewed as kind of like these ugly things, but like salmon fishing is absolutely like horrible in the environment, and it's especially cruel the way they treat salmon. So I think about it the same way for bugs. You know, like we care a lot about butterflies and, you know, ladybugs, because those are like, those are cute bugs that you like to have, but like a spider's scary, so people tend to not care about them.
Yeah, I think I completely agree about with what you said. Yeah, I think the most popular bugs, like you said, were like ladybugs and like other cute ones, which are not a lot, like butterflies and maybe some moths. But even with moths, it's just like, you just remember the ew, yucky looking brown one and not the cute ones, because they're not that popular. But yeah, I think it has to do with how attractive they look to us and not how they impact our lives or like how easy they make life on, or so like the ecological system on our planet and how they work with it.
I feel like for me, the movies or images that I will show of them will really impact my impression of them. Like, for example, I hate butterflies. They scare me actually maybe more than spiders. But for example, bees, which are like, yeah, they're very important and etc. I think just of a movie that I used to watch when I was young gives me this a good image of them.
Is it the B movie?
Yeah. So I'm just thinking maybe a solution would be also to like create this good image inside the popular culture, and maybe people will see them in a better way.
Yeah, I think the, like you mentioned, the bee movie, I think it humanizes bees a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't make them as scary, because I also remember thinking when I was younger, because, you know, you're taught to be like, be wary of bugs and don't try to mess with them because they'll come and bite you. So I used to be scared of bees, but I also think watching the bee movie and just like growing up to be more fond of them, it just humanized them for me. And then like, it made me understand their impact. Even though it was like a kids movie, I still like it helped me just like understand what they mean to us.
Yes, because we're poli sci majors, it's something difficult for us.
Yeah. Everything always comes back to poli sci.
Yes.
Okay, so we're gonna take a short break and we're gonna play Sidhu by Clay and Friends, and we will be back after this short musical interlude.
C'était deux billets d'avion, mais on a manqué le vol. Je voulais lui faire la cour, jamais été à l'école. Je connaissais comme mon alphabet, un peu comme Element OP. La vie passe en un clin d'œil, je t'enfonce dans le fleuve. Soit ta bouteille était forte, mon wifi il est faible. Bébé m'a dit qu'elle sera vegan. Sauf les jours de la fin. Si ma mémoire fait défaut, rappelle-moi ses numéros. Et c'est jusqu'à l'an 3000, pour le meilleur ou le pire. Si elle vient des pays chauds, on parle demain. Comme un retour d'impôt, tout le monde la voulait. Elle m'a jamais demandé mon signe, j'en ai oublié Joséphine.
C2 by Clay and Friends. They are also a local Montreal band. That seems to be a common recurring theme with me. But we still have Sai on the line with us. So Sai, last week when we were talking about movies, you came in like at the end of the episode. And so we never got to hear your introduction. So do you want to like briefly introduce yourself in the like last 10 minutes of the show?
Sure. Hi, I'm Sai. I am a student at McGill. My pronouns are they/them, and I'm currently studying psych and geology, and I like bugs.
Can I ask what? Okay, so I'm going to preface this by saying that I once went on a date with a man who was very into geology, but he talked about rocks the entire time, so it really turned me off to the entire. I'm sorry. It really turned me off to the entire discipline, because now every time I hear geology, I think of like that one very bad date. So do you want to redeem your field of study for me? Because
Yeah, that's very valid. I think I like geology a lot, but I don't think I would be very into somebody who talks about rocks the entire time, even though I do that sometimes, but not all the times.
And especially not on a first date.
Absolutely no. That is not my opener. I don't go, hey man, do you want to listen to me talking about rocks for an entire hour? No. If I had to redeem my field of study, I would say you get to learn about dinosaurs, which everybody likes dinosaurs. I'm currently holding this thing, although it's not a dinosaur-related thing. I'm currently at Calgary, and this is apparently a mascot for University of Calgary. But you get to learn about dinosaurs, you get to learn about evolution, and even if you don't like bugs or dinosaurs, you still get to learn how humans came to be, and people like humans because we're humans. And you also get to learn about Earth history and how Earth was formed, and I think that's very cool. I am personally a big fan of the early eras, like Hadean and Pre-Archean, which is when Earth was just a big ball of magma and small bacteria. But yeah, that's, I do not know if that redeems it for you, but it's a small introduction to a cool world.
I think it does, because now I know that it's more than just, you know, rocks. It's
also, you get to learn about crystals, and I took an entire course about crystals.
Don't talk to me about crystals.
See, had he talked about crystals for 30 minutes, maybe there would have been a second date, but no, rocks.
I have a terrible memory of crystals because I had to take science classes in high school, and we couldn't choose, so we had to, it was mandatory to take them. And so we spent, I think, 6 months on crystals, and so now I'm totally traumatized. But I'm sure it sounds great.
Yeah, that's very fair. I am an on and off fan of crystals. I'm still taking geology classes, and one of the classes is petrology, which is when crystals interact in rocks. And for one of the midterms, we had to describe the tiny crystals, and sometimes it's difficult to see what they are. But, you know, not a big fan when I have to do them, but when they're in a big, just mineral form, then delightfully, yes.
So in the 4 minutes we have left, I have to ask you a question that I asked at the end of last episode, because I don't think you got the time to answer, which is, if there is one movie that if you were to recommend it, it would tell a person a lot about you, what movie would it be? It could be anything. It doesn't need to be like the movie to define your life. Just, you know, one that you feel like this tells a lot about me.
I was thinking about it when you asked everybody that last time too. I don't know. I like movies, but I think, I don't know if it will define my life, but I think I have two recommendations. They're both not great to a lot of people, but the first one is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I love that movie. Like,
yay!
I hate the ending, but I love that movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I think the main characters are terrible, but the movie is great. But I love that movie. I like how it's directed. I think how fast it is. It just like, and how it's like, how it's shot. It just like makes sense in my head. And I feel like that's how my thoughts are too. And the second movie is Silence of the Lambs. It's very scary. It has moths in it. It's very nice.
I've never seen Silence of the Lambs. I don't know about you, Adele.
You should see Silence of the Lambs. It's very nice.
It's a horror movie, isn't it?
Super
scary?
Well, not really.
Because my
it's
mom,
a gory movie.
Yeah, my mom told me never to watch it because it traumatized her, so.
Well, fair. But I think it's not that scary. It's just mostly like murder and stuff. So if you're not into killing, I would not recommend.
I know it's like a part of this like essential like viewing, you know, like people are like, these are the 100 movies you should watch before you die. I know that like Silence of the Lambs is on there, but I feel like it's one I will get to, but I don't know if I ever will. I don't know. It's complicated.
You watch it on your deathbed just to make the top 100 movies. So you don't have to remember it.
I'm not gonna lie, there's a lot of movies on that list that I just know I'm never gonna watch, and I don't like. A few years back, I wanted to watch every single movie to win an Oscar, and then I watched a video of a guy doing it, and he was being like, this movie, don't watch it, it's not worth your time. And yeah. So I just took like all the years, I put them in a random year generator and I picked one, and the movie it recommended was a movie called Gigi, and it was so awful, I just bailed on the project.
Yeah, that's very fair. What was the movie about?
It opens up with a man singing a song about how young girls are amazing because you get to watch them grow up. And I was like, no,
no. Yeah, that's fair. I understand your opinion now.
It's like a musical about a man who's in love with this woman's daughter who's like way too young. It's a really weird movie. It's done like a it used to be a Broadway musical, and I was like a musical theater kid and I hated that play. So to watch it turn into a movie was just awful. It was torture.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like a great time.
No, it was not a great time.
So thanks for having listened to Voices of Montreal today.
Yeah. And
let's end up the show with a song, an Italian song.
So this is called
Fiamme negli occhi.
I was going to try to say that. I take Duolingo with Italian, but yeah, by Comicos.
Quando ti sto vicino sento che a volte perdo il baricentro. E ondeggio come fa una foglia, anzi come la California. Metà sono una donna forte, decisa come il vino buono. Metà una Venere di Milo, che prova ad abbracciare un uomo. E anche se qui c'è troppa gente, io me ne fotto degli altri e te lo dico ugualmente.
Sto vicino sento che a volte perdo il baricentro. Galleggio in una vasca piena di risentimento. E tu sei il tostapane che ci cade dentro. Grattugio le tue lacrime, ci salerò la pasta. Ti mangio la malinconia, così magari poi ti passa. Mentre ondeggi come fa una foglia, anzi come la California,
resta qui.
E 90.3 FM. You know you want to.
Des liens intergénérationnels pour les personnes queer et trans d'ici. À quoi ça ressemblerait? C'est le sujet de la nouvelle série de Gay Gris Montréal, Partage d'aînés queer. Des aînés trans et queer racontent leurs histoires dans une collection de balados et en films, formant ainsi une archive historique pour les générations futures. Branchez-vous sur CKUT pour écouter les épisodes à partir du 22 février. En attendant, allez voir Gay Gris sur Facebook pour suivre leur lancement plus tard ce mois-ci. Histoire, conseils et connexions, tout est sur CKUT au 90.3 FM.
The following is a previously broadcast program.